see if they need me or not.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_beeble. Make sure you are checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network as we head towards the NBA playoffs. Find us on Twitter at LockedOnNBANet, the same on Facebook, and the website LockedOnSports.com, your home for all of the Locked On Podcast Network shows. I just recorded the Monday edition of Locked On NBA, so go and check out the Locked On NBA show that I host once a week. It is a five-day-a-week NBA show, so go check that one out and download that one as well. Well, if you are still listening to this podcast, either A, your league goes too long — it's for seasonal guys, your league goes too long and it should never go this far — or B, you really like the show. And if you're in the latter case, then congratulations to you. I appreciate you still listening. I know many people are done with fantasy for this season, but I'm going to try and sprinkle in some more, you know, real life observations as well as fantasy stuff over the remaining 10 days of the regular season. But remember, the podcast does not go away. There are still shows all through the playoffs and the off season, preseason, all that sort of stuff. But if you are still listening, I'm glad to still have you guys on board, especially if your league is no longer going. If your league is going, again, get that shit changed as soon as possible. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Today's show, we're going to do a little bit differently. Tomorrow, of course, there are no games in the NBA because of the college March Madness final between Villanova and Michigan. And I am going for Villanova because, unbeknownst to me, I picked the Villanova-Michigan final for my bracket, and I've got Villanova as the winner there. I had absolutely no idea until someone told me yesterday, "Hey, Josh, you're doing well in the bracket." I went, "Am I? Really? Okay, let's go and have a look." So I had Villanova-Michigan there in the final, and I've got Villanova to win without having watched one single second of college basketball this season. So we'll see how that ends up panning out for me. So what we're going to do in today's podcast, no DFS in today's show. We will have a show tomorrow that is all DFS because we had 13 games on Sunday, we've got 0 games on Monday, and we've got 13 games again on Tuesday. So for Tuesday's podcast, I'll be doing the 13-game DFS preview rather than put them all together into one big, you know, 2-plus-hour show. We're just going to recap Sunday, look at the week ahead for seasonal, and then on tomorrow's show, we'll do a DFS preview for an absolutely insane 13-game slate. Let's look though at not necessarily the week ahead, but the remaining 10 days in the NBA season for you guys whose season does go to the end of the year. Again, I cannot stress enough, do not do this. Do not play your leagues this far head to head. Roto, it's a little bit of a different story. There's no problem if it goes to the end. I probably wouldn't, and I'm not sure how my leagues are set up in the listener leagues for Roto. I probably, if it's not set up to end already, I probably should change it. But Roto going to the end of the year is not a big deal. Head-to-head leagues needs to stop. So what we'll look at is how the games split over these remaining 10 games. As I've already mentioned, on Monday we have 0 games. Tuesday, 13. Wednesday, 6. Thursday, 6. Friday, 10. Saturday, 6. Sunday, 7. Monday, 9. Tuesday, 6. And Wednesday, 12. So, of course, The ideal streaming days, we've got Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, and then Tuesday in the week after that, with that last day going to be a 100% absolute guaranteed shit show, with majority of teams in the league fielding subpar lineups, every, you know, 12 players playing 20 minutes each, random 10-day call-ups getting 40 minutes, just batshit crazy stuff going. So it's a good idea to hold at least one or two acquisitions for that Wednesday, because even though a player like Nigel Hayes might be someone where you go, who does he actually play for? On that Wednesday, you might find Nigel Hayes starting and playing 40 minutes and therefore becoming a top 70 guy who would be worth an addition to go onto your roster on that Wednesday, because Harden's out and Westbrook's out, And Durant's out and Draymond's out and, you know, every dickhead in the world is out. So those, you know, top, you know, 20 of the top 50 guys might not actually be playing. So some of these scrubs who move into those lineups, you know, can start to have an impact. So of course, as I said, we're looking at Wednesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday as our streaming days for this week ahead. if you want to look at back-to-backs and pseudo-back-to-backs to maximize your acquisitions or to make the most of those acquisitions, Wednesday, Thursday, back-to-backs? Unfortunately, there is no team that plays on that Wednesday, Thursday, back-to-back, so we've got nothing to really benefit from there. But Thursday, Saturday, there's a whole bunch of teams. Milwaukee, Houston, Denver, Brooklyn, Golden State, the Clippers, and the Blazers. Many different options of players you can stream through there. Gerald Green in Houston looks particularly sexy. Devin Harris, Trey Lyles, Mason Plumlee in Denver. Babyneck Wilson Chandler looks like a guy to look at. Yeah, the Muppet John Henson, if he's available, there's some nice numbers there for him. In Brooklyn, you got plenty of guys. Karis LeVert, Jarrett Allen, the blue swimmer Alan Crabb, Damari Carroll, if they're available. For the Warriors, Kevon Looney, who continues to put up block numbers. For the Clippers, you're looking at Ty Wallace, who probably should be owned anyway. He's going to have some value there. You could be potentially look at the table, Montrezl Harrell. In Portland, we're looking at maybe some of these bigger men. Myers Leonard, Zach Collins with Ed Davis's absence. Do you look at Shabazz Napier or Pat Connaughton with Mo Harkless out? Definitely some value there. Saturday, Sunday, the Warriors, interesting. In fact, the Warriors are very interesting because they play the Thursday, Saturday. They play Saturday, Sunday back-to-back, and then they have the Sunday, Tuesday back-to-back. So if you pick up Warriors players on Thursday, you get four quality games out of them with one acquisition. So that's talking about guys like Looney. Perhaps it's Jordan Bell. Perhaps you're looking at Uncle P, Nick Young. Maybe it's Zaza. But you can get four good games out of those guys with one acquisition. They're the only team that has the Saturday, Sunday back-to-back. And there's a bunch of teams that have Sunday, Tuesday. The Sixers, the Celtics, the Lakers, the Jazz, Mavericks, Pacers, Warriors, Hawks, Hornets, and Suns all have that pseudo back-to-back to end the week, which that Tuesday will be the last potential streaming day outside of whatever shit show goes on the Wednesday. If we have a look at how this in weekly leagues, how the schedule plays out, you've got five teams that have four games, the Wolves, the Hornets, the Suns, the Kings, and the Thunder. And then you've got five teams that play six games. So you can get pretty big differences there between a Sixers player, a Celtics, a Magic, a Raptors, or a Lakers player. All of those play six games versus those Wolves, Hornets, Suns, Kings, and Thunder guys. So looking at a player like JJ Redick, does he have more value than Devin Booker? If Booker even plays those four games and Redick plays six, then which one's going to be more valuable? They're legitimate decisions that you will have to make in that situation. Yeah. You look at some other, you know, Marcus Morris, could he be a better add than Steven Adams for those six games versus four games? That's a distinct possibility as well. So these are really important things that you do need to look at, because a two-game difference is obviously much more significant than a 4-3-game difference. Really, really talking about, you know, some big swings in value that you could get happening over that time frame. Of course, the rest of the NBA is playing five games, and you're going to have some lineup decisions to make there. Teams like the Pelicans, the Blazers, the Hawks, the Pistons, they all have relatively negative matchups, whereas the Bulls, the Bucks, the Wizards, and the Rockets, they've got positive matchups, especially the Bulls, who play Brooklyn twice in that time frame. So perhaps guys like Noah Vonleh, Punchbob Shiploke, Chris Felizio, especially when we're talking big men going up against the Nets, those guys are in a really good spot. We don't know if we're going to see Chris Dunn again. If I had to wager, I'd say he won't play again. So Jaron Grant and Cameron Payne get a little bit of a bump in that five-game time frame as well. So lots of stuff for us to look at. Obviously, you can check all of this out over on Basketball Monster, how the week projects for the remaining games for this team as we wind down this 2017-18 NBA regular season. Let's go in now to the monstrous line of the night from Sunday's games, and it goes to Victor Oladipo of the Indiana Pacers. 30 points for Oladipo, three triples, four rebounds, 12 assists, but as he's been doing all year, getting big, big defensive numbers. Five steals for Oladipo, one block, 11 of 17 from the field, and 5 of 6 from the free throw line. He has been outstanding, the 11th ranked player all year. He was 75th last season, one of the largest jumps we've seen, averaging 23 points, over two triples, five rebounds, 4.5 assists, 2.3 steals, and 0.7 blocks per game. The big, big change there is obviously the defense. It was almost an inexplicable dip in his defense last season. It had nothing to do with Russell Westbrook. Maybe it was confidence, maybe it was Bill Donovan, but he went from 1.6 steals per game, which he'd averaged pretty much through his career, down to 1.1. Now, he's taken it wildly in the other direction, But that's key. He also went from 0.8 blocks to 0.3 blocks last year, and now back up to 0.7. So those numbers are coming back. His free throw has rebound. Free throw percentage has jumped back up 6% after suffering a weird 7.5% dip last year. So getting that back in business. And his field goal percentage has risen 3% as well on the year. So while he was significantly disappointing last year, we know that it wasn't all a Westbrook thing. Yeah, the usage dipped a little bit, but it was these weird things like, why is your steal rate dropping by 50%? Why is your block rate dropping by 50%? Why have your free throws dropped by 8 percentage points? All these things had huge, huge negative impacts on his overall value. And while he wouldn't have been the 11th ranked guy or anything like that in Oklahoma City, he could have easily been a top 35, top 30 sort of a guy if those other numbers had have been where they were. But he has been ludicrous this season. The steals are amazing. His biggest strength category are his steals. Excellent blocks, good assists, scoring. Just one of the best players in the NBA this year, especially for us as fantasy owners. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Quinny Cook of the Golden State Warriors. Cookie had 19, 4, and 6 with 3 triples and 3 steals, and once again was efficient. 7 of 11 from the field and hit both of his free throws. He's barely outside the top 50 over the last 2 weeks, averaging 17, 4.5, and 5.5. with a steal a game on really impressive 59% true shooting, which is 50 from the field and 43 from three-point range, which is not all that different to what he shot in the G League. So while it seems high, and it is, he's a good shooter. In his 14 games for the Pelicans last year, he shot 51% from the field and 42% from three. We're talking really small samples, but it just keeps happening everywhere that he is. I've talked about Cook a lot with his ability to hit the threes, to get his assists, to get the scoring and do it efficiently. And it's continuing on. And I do think that he can be a low end starter, but a high quality backup in the NBA. And his future is going to be, he's definitely earned himself a full time multi-year contract next year. We'll just have to see where it all pans out, but he's a clear must own guy down the stretch of this season. The young gun of the night, it's Ben Simmons, no real surprise there. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 15 assists, 3 steals and 2 blocks, 10 of 17 from the field, just putting up numbers consistently. He's barely outside the top 20 for the year, but that's pretty much because of his free throw percentage, which is at 56% on 4 attempts per game, which gives him a Z score of -2.7, a real dip in that category. But if you're punting that number, he's a clear top 20 guy. 16, 8, and 8 with almost 2 steals and 0.8 blocks on 54%. And yes, he doesn't shoot threes. You should not give one single shit about whether he shoots threes or not. You know what he does. He does it well, and he's continuing to do it well, even without Joel Embiid there. He is my pick for Rookie of the Year. You've heard me say it before. I haven't wavered on that. And I think that this stretch down here where he is really, to me, he is confirming that he is the Rookie of the Year and putting up some really strong numbers and looks to be a consistent top 20 head-to-head fantasy guy, probably going to push to top 15 at some point, maybe top 10s out of his reach, but I think he can be a top 20, top 15 guy for many, many seasons to come. So Benny Simmons is your young gun of the night. Your dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Trevor Ariza, 7-3, 0 assists, 1-3, 1 steal, 2 of 7 from the field, and 2 of 4 from the free throw line. He hasn't been not good since he returned from his hamstring injury. He is outside the top 130 over the last 3 months, shooting only 39%. He was a guy that you would have heard me talk about plenty of times, that I was significantly down on heading into this season. And, you know, I had no issue with saying that he was a guy that, you know, at times you didn't need to own him. He's really a type of player who's a luxury for threes and for some steals, and that's what he's doing, but he's doing absolutely nothing else. His field goal percentage is terrible. He doesn't get to the line, so he's not really an impact in free throws. No assists, no rebounds, low scoring, you know, no blocks. He just doesn't do enough for me to consider him a must-own guy. And with the way that he's shooting, now I'm in a punt field goal percentage setting, it's a little bit different. You can probably hold on if you just need that steals and threes combo, but he really is a specialist, and I don't think that we should be labeling him 100% as a must-own guy, and I think it's going to get worse for him next season. And yeah, I do not see him being anywhere close to those numbers. Of course, the people who play in 9-cat leagues will tell me, oh, but his turnovers are so low, and you know that I don't care about that. Again, when a player's best category is their turnovers, it really does skew all the rest of their value, and that's where that jump in numbers that Ariza provides in terms of that pure ranking number does skew what his production is in those other areas. So he is not a player that I think needs to be held on to for the remainder of this season, more just a streaming type guy. All right, let's go into these games now. The other thing I'm also going to do, which I should have mentioned a little bit earlier on, is the player spotlight, which you know that I've been doing. I'm going to suspend that for the rest of the season because what we'll do is we'll incorporate a lot of the chatter on the player spotlight into the season review podcast. And of course, there are, you know, fewer people listening at this point. So rather than me talk about someone and then a couple of weeks in talk about them again from their dynasty long-term perspective and looking at all these numbers, we'll stop the player spotlight from here on out. I hope you guys have enjoyed that part of the show. That will definitely come back next year, but we will do more of that stuff in the season review podcast, which will start during the playoffs at some point. Let's have a look now at this game, or the first of the 13 games, the Philadelphia 76ers and the Charlotte Hornets. No Joel Embiid, obviously, but Dario Saric was out of this one also. So Ersan Ilyasova made a start, and he was good again. 16-3 with 4 triples and a block. That's 2 strong games without Embiid. A little bit fluky with the shooting here, but he still does need to be owned, and he is clearly the guy at this point who is the most beneficial, or is benefiting the most from Embiid's absence. Rashawn Holmes was shithouse, 6-9 in 17 minutes, while Amir Johnson played 31 minutes. Yeah, Holmes, so many people had so many high hopes for Holmes. I was, you know, much more muted on that, and oh, but I look, admittedly now, when Embiid went down, I said, look, go and grab Holmes. He's not going to get 30, and we're seeing that now, but I didn't expect a 31 to 17 minute split versus him and Amir. It won't be like this every game, but Holmes is not going to be this top 40 guy for your remaining 10 games of the season. Covington was excellent, 17-11 with 7 steals, just putting up the, look, shooting the shit out of it in a negative way, just continuing to shoot it, but not hitting any of them. But those steals, those rebounds, the rebounds were always going to come up without Embiid there, and we're seeing that now. While Ballinelli dropped in 22, and Redick had 20 with 8 triples before between them. Markel Fultz, playing exclusively as a backup point guard, does not share the court with Simmons at all. 4 points and 4 assists for Fultz in 16 minutes. I don't think you should be really looking at him at all in any 12-team leagues. He is just a deeper league guy, but I've been impressed with what I've seen on the court. The Hornets, they went full tank mode, playing everyone 20 minutes, apart from Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who played 32. He was a guy that's playing 21 minutes a night normally. So they said, well, in order for us to be worse, let's play one of these guys more minutes who we don't give those minutes to on a regular basis. He played 32. Everyone else was spread right out. Kemba only played 26, and that allowed Malik Monk to have probably his best game, all-round game anyway. 24 minutes, 16-2-3 for Monkey, 4 triples, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. And he was probably the most disappointing rookie of the entire NBA season, until about the last 3 weeks or so, where he started to look impressive. And I think that we could be seeing him become an interesting, at least 14-team league guy next year. The development as a point guard, the getting those assists, like instead of 2 assists, if you can get 4.5 assists, that's a huge fantasy difference. He blocked 2 shots in this game, not sure how real that is. But you know, getting some steals, scoring and hitting threes, I think he can be a very, very interesting player next year. Bill Hernangómez, 15-11 in 22 minutes. Cody Zeller is out for the rest of the season. We're not going to have Dwayne Bacon or Trevion Graham out in their lineup for the next 2 games. So I think Bill is a low-end, probably 14-team league sort of a player. But if they continue to do this limiting of the starters with Dwighty playing 26, then Bill could be a standard league player after a real disappointing year for him. Marvin Williams, the shitfulness continues. 5 points in 22 minutes for Starvin Marvin. The Houston Rockets and the San Antonio Spurs, look, very, very little here to talk about. The Spurs smashed them. The Rockets have got literally nothing to play for. Chris Paul was out. They still played Jim Harden 36 minutes, which is great for your fantasy owners, but makes no sense. 25-3-8. Gerald Green, I think, is going to get big minutes down the stretch. 11-8 with a steal and a block and 2 triples. He can be a points, a threes, perhaps a steals type of an option, but there are going to be liberal rests for Harden, for Gordo, for Paulie. He is going to get playing time here, and even Ariza as well, who stunk it up as we talked about earlier. Ryan Anderson had 2 points on one shot, so that's excellent. While Clint Capela had 11 and 10 with two blocks, continuing his excellent season. For the Spurs, Aldridge had 23 and 14 with three blocks. They're one of the teams that needs to keep winning. So we're going to see, you know, good value come out of Spurs players. Dan Green had the Richie Banner. 12 points, 7 rebounds, 2 triples, 2 steals and 2 blocks for Green, while Rudy Gay, probably his best game for the Spurs, 21 in 24 minutes, but when he shoots 69%,
giggity,
you got to realize it's unrealistic to continue. He had 0 assists and 3 rebounds. The defensive numbers are nice, but this is not an every night thing for Gay. He is a streamer, a 14-16 team league guy, much like Kyle Anderson, whose minutes are well down. He had 5-1 and 5 in this one. DeJounte, 13 and 6, a strong performance from him, but far from his best, but I still think that he has a spot in 12 team leagues. The Indiana Pacers and the Los Angeles Clippers. This was a good Miles Turner game. 24 and 8 with a block and 2 threes on 60% shooting. His inconsistency is extraordinarily frustrating. I think he's going to be an absolutely massive draft day steal next year. But of course, this has been a frustrating campaign from him. Thaddeus Young was shit. 8 points with 9 rebounds, while Boyan had 15 and 5. And much to everybody's surprise still listening, did nothing else. But if you need points and threes, we know that Boyan can do that. Dazza Collison had 14, 1 and 4. Nice numbers, consistent numbers from him the majority of the time. While Domantas Sabonis had 2 and 4 in only 19 minutes. Really hard to rely upon him outside of deeper formats. For the Clippers, my man, the list manager, Ty Wallace, 37 minutes, 9, 4 and 2, and the triple one. The biggest positive there is the fact that he played 37 minutes. He's not going to be a big scorer every night, but he can chip in with rebounds, he can get assists, he can get steals and blocks for a point guard at high rates, and I do think that he is going to continue to play this sort of a role and be a useful contributor. The Clippers, another one of those teams that needs to keep winning. The table, Montrezl Harrell had 19 with 3 and 2, an excellent high-efficiency field goal percentage source with some scoring thrown in there, while the Rooster, only 1 of 9 shooting, which is terrible, clearly. But he played 32 minutes. He went to the line 5 times and hit all of those. He had 3 blocks and 6 rebounds. And if he hits an extra 3 of those shots, you're talking 13, 6 and 3 blocks, and you're going pretty bloody happy with that, as well as the real big positive from the free throw line. So he is a guy that if he was dropped, and he would have been in lots of places, he's a must own. As is Austin Rivers, 18, 3 and 7 with 2 steals. Excellent. Toby Harris and Lou Williams both went over 20. And the elevation of play from Rivers this year has been impressive, as it has with Tobias Harris. The Washington Wizards and the Chicago Bulls, just an absolutely putrid win from the Bulls and a putrid loss from the Wizards. How two teams can want the same outcome and then arrive at a different outcome is a weird situation. Johnny Wall was out, so Tomas Satoransky got what will probably be his last start of the year. 9, 5 and 6 for Sato, so you can drop him if you do still have him, while Marcin Gortat, 10 and 7 with 2 blocks in 24 minutes. Gortat had a marginal resurgence here. I would have him in the Bill Hoonan and Gomez level of, hey, do I need a big man? Maybe they can chime in. But yeah, a couple of good games in a row for Marcin. Otto had 17 and 3, while Oubre was not ideal. 4 points in 16 minutes for Kelly. Just a shitful performance, and he is a streaming guy, while Markeith had 8 and 5, and I think he's probably a back-end 12-team league player at this point. Beal was all right, 15, 4 and 5 with 3 steals, but this game was over pretty early on. Punch Bob had 18 and 4 with 4 triples, but only 16 minutes as the Bulls just spread the rotation right across the board. Almost impossible to work out what's going to happen with this team. The reports coming from Casey Johnson that Zach LaVine and Chrissy Dunn won't play again this season, or likely won't play again this season, should give you a level of hope in Cameron Payne. But when he plays 25 minutes and Jaron Grant plays 26 minutes, yeah, really hard to get excited about either of those guys. Grant had 11, 1 and 7, and Payne had 5, 2 and 2. And if that's the bullshit that's going to be pulled, then it is really hard to consider any of those players must own. Same with David Nwaba, who played 20 minutes and had 10, 6 and 5. Denzel the Hammer Valentine had 5 points in 18 minutes. We got a 15-minute cameo from Ryan Archer-Jacano. We had sexy boy Sean Kilpatrick. He played 23 minutes for 14 and 6, and he can be maybe a 16, maybe 14 team league points type of streamer, maybe an ad, but he's going to get opportunities. While Justin Holiday had 12 points in 17 minutes. It was a good night from Lauri Markkanen, who had 23 and 6, 5 triples, But again, only 25 minutes. Don't expect any of these players to play big minutes at any point moving forward as the Bulls evaluate their options. The next game we look at, the Oklahoma City Thunder and the New Orleans Pelicans. Huge win for the Thunder. Terrible loss for the Pelicans as these two teams continue to battle. Their rotations, their players are going to be fairly solid for the rest of the way. Westbrook 26, 15, and 13, another triple-double, while Paulie George was hot early and cooled off significantly. 27 points on 24 shots, but still three triples and three steals is nothing to sneeze at. While Mello scored okay, 16 points, took 16 shots, had four triples and six rebounds, missed both his free throws, and as I've stated numerous times, is not a must-own player. Steve-O Adams, 14 and 10, while Jez Grant, 12 points in 17 minutes for Jeremy on really, I was going to say high field goal percentage, doesn't get any higher than 5 of 5 from the field. The two blocks and the one steal is the more important thing there, I think, for Grant. That's more replicable, but more of a, he's really only a streaming sort of a guy. For the Pelicans, Tone Davis, 25 and 11 with three steals and two blocks, and Drew had 12, 5 and 8 with five steals. So great numbers from both of those guys. While Rondo was also pretty good, 11, 8 and 9, and he deserves a spot in a 12-team league. Nick Mirotic doesn't. You can drop his ass pretty quickly. 4-4 in 19 minutes, while Sheck Diallo down to 7 minutes because Darius Miller's playing a lot. 14 points with 3 triples in 27 minutes. He's in the high 20s most of these nights. And if you need threes, Darius Miller's going to be one of those players who's around, like Ian Clark and Etuan Moore. All of those guys hit three triples in this game, but they're all going to be pretty strong options. And it's, again, it's one of those reasons why when I talk about, and I'm going to really dig into this when looking at rankings and stuff like that, or projections, or, you know, draft tiers and all that sort of stuff we talk about preseason, is that, you know, maybe just knocking guys down a bit who get you threes because they're such an easy category to find. So we'll think about ways to talk about that over the offseason. The next game, the Orlando Magic and the Atlanta Hawks, just that's a putrid score, 88-94. Hawks get the win. DJ Augustine is a must-own, 27-3. But I'll say one thing from the Magic. You talk about the Bulls, you can talk about the Grizzlies and the Suns and all that. At least the Magic, they're playing their better players like a normal rotation. You got 37 minutes for DJ, 31 for Nick Vucevic, 37 for Az Gordon. Like, these are numbers that you can rely upon. They're just bad, and there are some weird combinations that Vogel throws out there. But, you know, we've got a consistency there with Vuce, a consistency with Gordon, and a consistency with DJ, who's really crushing at the moment. Mario Hezonja, he had 14 and 2, but the three steals and a block are the nicest part of that. The three triples are pretty good, and his role, as long as John Simmons is out, feels like it's steady enough to be a back-end 12-team league guy, while my boy, Nick Vucevic, sort of is my boy. He had 10 and 14 with three blocks and two steals. But John Isaac's the one I wanted to talk about. 15 and 4 for Johnny with a steal and three triples in 20 points. We've seen the defense. We know that's there. But it's good to see him have the 15 points to hit three threes and become more of an offensive threat. This guy has got top 40 written all over him. Not for this year. Probably not for next year. But just mark my words on him. Feel free to come back and give me shit about it later on. But I think he's going to be really, really good. As Gordon, 10 and 7 with a steal and a block. Not great from him, but still fairly solid. On to the Hawks. The Undertaker, 17 and 10 with three triples and a block for Dwayne Dedman. He should be owned in all leagues. His minutes they're up. He's been playing well majority of the season. Outside of that portion of the year where Budenholzer decided we must see Miles Plumlee in there ahead of him, which was as nonsense as you can get in terms of coaching. Well, the Baptist John Collins had 10 and 11 with two blocks. Both of those guys should be owned. I'd even throw in the Moose Mike Muscala, 13 and 10 with three triples in 25 minutes. He can be owned. I wouldn't say he's a must own in anything deeper than 12-team leagues. I think you have to. His role is fairly secure. Formerly had 5 and 8. In 27 minutes, only took 6 shots. It was a down game from him, but he still, these weird games, he added 8 assists. Like, where's this shit coming from Taurean Prince? He needs to be owned, clearly. Well, DeAndre Bembry was finally back, and I think that had an impact on Damian Lee's minutes. 23 for Lee, while Bembry played 14, and Bembry showed why he can be a fantasy guy. 4-3-3 in 14 minutes. You go to 28 minutes, and yes, it's only 8 points, but it's 6 rebounds, 6 assists. And it's his ability, and he needs to be able to hit the three, which I know he only hit one all of last season, but he looked a little bit better in the limited time this season. But get a steal per game, get 5 assists, get 5 rebounds, and get 10 points in 26 minutes. That's a possibility for Bembry. He's a guy to just watch over these last couple of days. Tyler Dorsey had 19 points on 73% shooting, so I think we can chalk that one up to a little bit of a fluke. On to the Pistons, Pistons and the Nets, actually. The Pistons won. Andre Drummond was ejected, 13 and 14. No Blake Griffin, obviously. 10 and 12, that meant for Tony Tolliver. He hit two triples and had two steals, and he actually can be a value guy whilst Blakey is out. While Stan Johnson, one of his better games, 17 points in 35 minutes. It was an Easter present for Kyle McEwen. Four rebounds, four assists, and four steals. But to not to be too much of an asshole, but this is what Kyle's talking about. You know, when he says, you know, Stanley can do things. He can defend. He can pass. He can run things. The shot has been horrendous. He goes missing at times, but he can contribute. He can handle the ball. He can get the steals. And this is an idea of what we could see on occasion from him. So it's something to keep in your mind. The minutes are up, but it's worth looking at. Luke Kennard is now in the concussion protocol. He had 25 minutes, 9 points with 2 assists. It just doesn't appear like that Van Gundy is going to actually unleash him fully after he was threatening to. He did. Kennard played well, and then he said, mate, rookies are getting too cocky. Kennard's walking in here with his dick out. Look at me, boys. I'm a rookie and I'm playing under Van Gundy. And Stan had to shut that down immediately and pushed him back into the teens in minutes. Reggie Jackson had 29, 4, and 3. The inefficiency is absolutely bad at the moment, and that's really not great English. I could have used insipid, maybe. Was a better word, but Jackson clearly does need to be grabbed. While Ishii Smith had 17 in 17 minutes, I think we can chalk that up to a large element of fluke. Also, I know I've harped on it a lot this year, but Reginald Bullock, he didn't hit his shots for once. 5 points on 10 shots, 2 of 10 from the field. I think that's the first time that's happened all year. D'Angelo Russell, who played only 6 minutes the previous game, was back starting, had 13, 4, and 7, 2 steals, 1 block, 3 triples in 28 minutes. I love him from a fantasy point of view. I'm not sure that he's a good NBA player. In fact, all evidence would say that he's not. But there is a lot of potential in what he can do. And if the minutes are there, the stats will come. And he does have the ability to be a top 40, top 35 guy. With him getting the minutes back, Spencer Dinwiddie went down to 12. He is a comfortable drop. While Caris LeVert continues to make me feel more confident in my proclamation that he could be the best player on this team. Maybe that's a little bit of a stretch, but he's really good. 10 with 7 assists, a 3 and a steal. It's all about getting the minutes. He's had over 30 the last two, though. And we're seeing a lot of positives out of LeVert. We're also seeing it from Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, who could be in for a big year next year if he doesn't get hurt. 14 and 8 with 3 assists and a steal. While Jarrett Allen, finally, 30 minutes, 15 and 6, 3 blocks. This is what he can do. This is why I like him. This is why he has top 60 potential in 2 years' time. Maybe a top 100 guy next year. Definitely get excited there. Damari Carroll had 11 and 4 in his 25, while the Blue Swimmer continues to be shit. The Dallas Mavericks and the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Mavericks, who'd been one of those teams like the Bulls, like the Suns, who playing everyone 20-odd minutes, decided against the Cavs they weren't going to do that. The pencil Harrison Barnes played 36. He had 30 points with 5 triples. While Dennis Smith played 33 minutes and had 14, 4, and 6. They're the two guys who you'd consider must-own on this team. Everyone else, it's a little bit up in the air. Dirk had 9 and 7. Nerlens had 0 and 7, but a steal and a block in 17 minutes. He's played the last 3 games because Measure is dealing with a hamstring issue. Well, Yogi Ferrell had 8 points in 18, and Dorian Finney-Smith, triple one, that's nice, played 30 minutes, also nice, just does nothing. He is just as deep a league guy as you can get, and it should go without saying that Dwighty Powell, who's seen his minutes cut recently, I loved what he did earlier this year and later this year, but at this point you can't hold on. For the Cavs, there was no Kyle Korver, no Georgie Hill again, so Jordy Clarkson stepped up with 16 points and 3 steals. I don't think that he is a guy for 12-team leagues, while LeBron triple-doubled 16, 13, and 12.
LeBron James!
The plumber J.R. Smith also had 3 triples for 15 points, and Kevin Love 13 and 13 in a whopping 36 minutes. But I think we can rule out Larry Nance being a must-own guy. I think I'd already ruled him out, but now we can really knock it in. He started, but only 22 minutes, 7 and 6, because Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green are cutting into his playing time.
My name is Jeff.
Rocket Rodney Hood had 9 and 2. He's very, very far from being a 12-team league player. The Utah Jazz and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Ravishing Rick Rubio, 23 points, 5 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 64% shooting. Jesus, man, that is absolutely ridiculous from him. The Don had 21, 3, and 4 with 2 steals, while Dante Exum, 14-3-5, continues to look really good. Now, I know Mark Roberts, who does a lot of the work for fantasy, I used to work with him at RotoWire and did a lot for Hashtag Basketball, was massive on Exum coming into his rookie season. I wasn't so big on him. I'm not sure how the stat profile was going to shake out, and that's been the case so far. But what we're seeing now is definitely a real improvement in what he can do in multiple facets, and with Rubio having, I think, 1 year left on his deal, Exum being a restricted free agent, it should be back. He's a really intriguing, I think, top 100 guy in 2 years' time sort of a player. Health is a problem, but I've been super impressed with what Exum has provided. Jingle and Joe added 9 assists, nice numbers there in that category, but not much else in the other ones. Well, Derek Favors had 16 and 3 with 2 blocks and played 32 minutes. And interestingly, his minutes have been up the last 2 games, while Jay Crowder's have been down. That could be just a factor of who they're matching up against, but it's worth paying attention to. On the Timberwolves, Jeff Teague was out.
My name is Jeff.
So Tyus Jones got the start, and he was good. 15 points, 4 assists, 4 steals, 2 triples. But of course, when Teague is back, Jones will go back to playing 13 minutes, 12 minutes, whatever bullshit there is. But interestingly, Derrick Rose was available to play in this game. Jeff Teague was out, Jimmy Butler was out, and Rose did not play at all. Maybe he's just bad. And if Tom Thibodeau, the only coach apparently that has ever known how to utilize Derrick Rose, according to the Derrick Rose Wristy Association, if he decides not to play him, what hope is there left? Wiggins, 23-6-4 with 2 steals. Townsie had 20-7, while Nemanja Bjelica played 26-7-5 with 2 steals. But the Wolves don't play against till Thursday. Jim Butler could return. So guys like Taj Gibson and Bjelica, if you added Jamal Crawford, Tyus Jones, these guys can be dropped in a lot of, not in pretty much every situation. Because again, you're talking about 3 days where they don't play, plus the impending return of Butler there. Also, shout out to Tom Thibodeau for waving the white flag before there was a minute 30 left, and for actually playing Justin Patton. You wasted a first-round pick on this guy, and I say wasted because I thought it was a bad pick at the time, and also because you have not used him for a single second all year until today. He got in there, he played 4 minutes, 2 points, nothing spectacular. He wasn't ever going to be spectacular, but the absolute nonsense of not playing him in a single game until there is 4 games left in the season is just another example you can scratch up on the Tom Thibodeau is a shit coach, bad GM table, which is getting pretty full these days. They got absolutely smashed in this one as well, the Timberwolves. The next game we look at, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Denver Nuggets. As crazy a game as you would see. Yanni got his 6th foul and was ejected after that 6th foul as well. He had 18, 12, and 6, and the game went to overtime. The Bucks were up so big in this game. I think they were up 3 points with like 2 seconds left and they had the ball and somehow still lost the game. Jabari, 35 and 10, 5 triples and 2 steals. Clearly his best game since returning. Got some extra minutes because of the overtime and because of Antetokounmpo's disqualification. I don't know what they're doing with Jabari. It's still up in the air whether he plays. If he plays 32 minutes next game, then he's a clear must-own guy. But if he goes back to the 24-minute mark, which I expect he does, then it's a bit tougher. The Muppet, John Henson, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 8 points. I think he, and 5 assists. Where are these assists coming from Henson? I think he's a 12-team league guy, while Middleton had 15 and 9, and he was bad in this game, but at least the bulk counting numbers are okay, while Bledsoe was excellent. 31, 5 and 6, a steal, and a block for him. Tone Snell continues in his efforts to be the most mediocre or below mediocre player in the NBA. 3 points in 33 minutes. Also, Brandon Jennings, hashtag street hunger, had a 4 trillion. On to the Denver Nuggets. Jokic was brilliant. 35, 13, and 5 with 3 blocks to keep them in playoff contention, while the Blue Arrow had 27, 2, and 7. And Paulie Millsap, one of his better games of the year, 26, 13, and 5, 2 triples, 1 steal, and 1 block. And the best thing about this is seeing the 3 best performers all doing it together. Jokic, Murray, and Millsap all having big games on the same day. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler was out, so Torrey Craig started, had 7 and 8 with 2 blocks in 36 minutes. I think he'll be an every night rotation guy, but he's more of a deeper league guy. Well, Will Barton continues to be the most frustrating player. I'm sure Nuggets fans can relate. He makes the dumbest decisions that you see on the court, non-Marquise Chris division. He still should be owned, but man, he is just, he is the player where you watch and your hand reflexively goes to your head and you just say, for God's sake, what are you doing? Or you just let out a guttural groan like, oh, what is that? That is Fartin Will Barton in a nutshell. Or he'll go in and do some crazy 360 reverse spinning layup and you go, what was that? He is the what was that guy, but under two different complete tones of voice. It's the, oh, what was that? Or it's the, what was that? Frustrating as anything. Hey, my boy Juancho Hernangómez played 21 minutes, 6 points, 2 dribbles. When Babinek is back, he won't see the court at all. While Malik Beasley closed the game out, somehow he had the ball in his hands for the foul game at the end. Went 2 of 4, but the Nuggets still squeaked it out. Really weird. Again, Malone, what the hell are you doing? Mason Plumlee, only the 3 minutes in this game. The Phoenix Suns and the Golden State Warriors. The Suns just decided to mix things up because Daniel House went off. 16-6 for Housie in 34 minutes with 3 assists and 2 blocks, including one of the plays of the year. He was against Nick Young. He faked Nick Young on a pump fake, went past him, threw it off the backboard, grabbed it and dunked it. It was crazy. But because he played so well, that meant that Troy Daniels, who'd been a reliable 3-point streamer, only saw 18 minutes. 2 points in those 18 minutes. We don't know if we're going to see Booker, Warren, Payton, or Len again. If I had to guess, if you said that, yes, they'll play all 4 games or they'll miss them all, then the clear answer there is they're going to miss them all. Joshie Jackson is a must-own, 22-2-5, while Dragan Bender, his best game in about 6 weeks, 14-10 with 4 triples. At this point, I think you have to own Marquise Chris. 22-9 and a triple one, staying on the court, playing better, looking smarter, looking better. Gotta own him. Tyler Ulis, 42 minutes. This is absolutely reminiscent of last year. 12-4-9 with 2 steals, going to kill your field goal percentage, and it's just going to bludgeon you with volume by getting as many minutes as possible. And he's an option, no doubt. Durant, 29-11-8. Draymond, 13-6-12. Clay had 23-2-2. So good performances from the stars there. Interestingly, Steve Kerr started Kevon Looney at center. I talked about him last week in a spotlight and how impressive he's been. He played 24 minutes, only 5-4, but 1 steal, 2 blocks. There is almost no better option for blocks out there on the wire. And with how well he's playing, he's going to be a rotation guy. Jordan Bell, 10-5. Good to see him get some action and do some stuff offensively. I would have Looney over Bell at this point just because I feel more comfortable with Looney's playing time. McGee only played 4 minutes and Zaza only 6 minutes, but those guys are going to be back and forward and in and out of lineups. I expect Looney to remain starting for at least the next couple just to see, and Kerr has basically said we just want to see how it all goes. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Portland Trailblazers, Marc Gasol was ready to play and he played 20 minutes, 7-5 and a triple one. I don't think he's topping 30 again this year. There's just going to be all sorts of bullshit going with this team. Not one player that played under 20 minutes. And we had a couple go over 30. So Jarrell Martin played 31 and Dylan Brooksy Brooks played 38. There was no Tyreek. I don't think he's playing again. Jermichael Green was out. Andy Harrison was out. And scoring sensation Marshawn Brooks was also out. Dylan Brooks had 28-6-4, 2 steals, a block and 4 triples. That's nice. But he just does that so infrequently that you can't rely upon that really at all. Well, Wayne Selden also had 17 in 29 minutes, but he is a streaming option who is as inconsistent as anything. Ivan Rabb also impressed with his 13 boards in 24 minutes, but very hard to trust anybody on this squad. For the Blazers, Lillard had 27 and McCollum had 20, and they both had 9 assists and actually tallied 6 steals between them. It's been a large criticism of their fantasy game from me for years, but if they can get themselves even to 1.4 steals per game, then they jump 4 or 5 spots in the rankings each. But at the moment, we're talking about guys who struggle to get 1 steal a game. So that's a good start. While the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was good. 17-10, 3 triples, 26 minutes. It is the Grizzlies, but it was a good performance from Aminu. He is a borderline sort of a guy. Well, Nurk had 23 minutes, 10-8, and we had a bunch of guys get in. Myers, Leonard, Caleb Swanigan, they replaced the Eddie Davis minutes. I think you can look at guys like Leonard, particularly for deep, deep leagues, 20 teamers, while Davis remains sidelined. The last game of the night was a brutal one. The Sacramento Kings and the Lakers. The Kings, again, just how do you have any sort of judgment on what these guys are doing? Cauley Stein had foul trouble. He only had 20 minutes, 11-7-4. Labissiere, 6-9 in 17 minutes, rolled his ankle. Zach Randolph apparently is dead. We just don't hear anything else about him. He was out again. I don't think he plays again this year. We had 8 rebounds from Jack Cooley in 16 minutes. And if there was an NBA player who you would look at and say, you're shitting me, there's no way this guy's an NBA player, that is Jack Cooley. But he grabs rebounds like a crazy man. You're going to have Vince Carter continuing to get minutes. Nigel Hayes played 22 minutes. Jakar Sampson played 17 minutes. There's going to be weird shit with this team all the rest of the season. Budrick had 19-3-2 with 4 steals. So I think Hield is probably the guy that you want in 12 teamers. You could also throw Bogdan in there, but he's been up and down. 15-4 with 2 steals for Bogdanovich. While De'Aaron Fox, he's a strong 14 team league guy, but not 100% a 12 teamer. 14-3-6. For the Lakers, there was no Lonzo Ball. There was no Brandon Ingram. So Uncle Alex Caruso got the start. 7-4-2 with a 1-1 in 30 minutes. That's just really uninspiring, though. While Tyler Ennis, his backup, had 4-3-4 with 2 blocks. There's nothing exciting there at all. In fact, this whole Lakers box score looks pretty pissy. Brook Lopez's minutes have dropped down to the mid-20s the last game, and it's coincided with increases to Channing Frye and Ivica Zubac's minutes. So just keep an eye on that. Lopez might become an option to stream out. Zubac had 7-10, while Frye had 3-9 with a 3 and a block. They're obviously deeper league guys, but their biggest impact is going to be perhaps taking 6 or 7 minutes away from what Lopez has been doing. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma. Luke Walton said before the game, Ingram's out. We're not going to play Kuzma or anything crazy. He's not going to get 45 minutes. So instead, he played him 39. I think Walton's definition of crazy minutes might be a little bit different to me. You still lost against the Kings in a game that means nothing. Why do we need to play 39 minutes for Kyle Kuzma? Life. All right, that is all of the action across the NBA for Sunday. As I said, a little bit of a different podcast today. We're doing no DFS stuff. That will come on tomorrow's show where we preview the 13 games for Tuesday. We are still going to be podcasting right up until the day before the last day of the season. There won't be a recap show after Wednesday, that final Wednesday's 12 games. We keep going and then we move into playoff stuff. DFS, playoff shows, and also sprinkling in some season in review shows for all of the teams heading up to the draft and some other interesting stuff that hopefully we can get done over that time frame. If you do listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go leave a 5-star rating and a review. It's an excellent way that you can help support the podcast. You can also find this show on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. And there is the Patreon where you can support if you won some money in your leagues or through DFS through this year and you want to become a financial supporter of this show. Head to patreon.com/redrock_bball and you can choose to support the show there, which I'd be greatly appreciative of. Follow me, Josh Lloyd, on Twitter @redrock_bball, and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, including Locked On NBA, which I hosted today, and we talked Heat and Hassan Whiteside's quotes. Spoiler, Hassan Whiteside, shit bloke. We talked Sixers, Embiid, and Fultz, and we talked the Milwaukee Bucks, Jabari Parker, the coaching change, and how things look for the playoffs. So check out Locked On NBA today. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Derek Rose.